Chapter 6. It was a day like any other. The sun beat down on the salt plains of Agoru, the shimmer, haze and dryness of the air as punishing as it had always been. A hot wind blew from the mountain, snapping at the scores of scarab and hawk banners of the thousand suns as they formed up into two lines on either side of a processional, a kilometre long. Five fellowships of the Legion, nearly 6,000 Astartes, stood resplendent in crimson and ivory battle armour, jade scarabs gleaming on breastplates, golden crests rearing from the Atef helmets of the scarab occult. The deshrets of the rest of the Legion were polished and plumed with gold and amethyst. It was a day like any other, but for one thing. The wolves were coming. Word had come down from the Fotep that a small fleet of Astartes vessels had translated from the Great Ocean and was closing with Agoru with frightening speed. Like a blade through water, the fleet had sliced through the outer reaches of the system on the swiftest route towards the 28th Expedition anchorage. Auspex's interrogation protocols revealed them to be ships of the Space Wolves, but the Thousand Suns already knew who they were. Magnus had shown no surprise when Ahriman had presented Callista Eris's words, merely ordering his captains to have the Legion ready to parade at dawn. To sense the arrival of a fleet of ships through the warp should have been no great feat for the Thousand Suns, but, save for Magnus, none of its warriors had any inkling of the imminent arrival of the Space Wolves. Ahriman had broached this with Magnus, but the Primarch had dismissed his concerns, saying that while their understanding of the currents of the fluid medium in which starships travel was second to none, it was not infallible. That hadn't reassured Ahriman. Thousands of Legion serfs gathered to witness this reunion of brothers, though they watched proceedings from afar. The remembrances, too, were kept at a distance, including Magnus's personal scribe, Mahavastu Callimachus. Ahriman sensed Lemuel, Camille, and Callista among them, sharing their sense of foreboding. He feared there was more to Callista Eris's message than he understood, yet a night spent in contemplation, trying to divine the echoes of the future from the great ocean, had once again met with failure. The frustration of the remembrancers at being excluded from today's proceedings was palpable, but this was a meeting of Astartes, a private thing. As auspicious as this day was, there was no mistaking the martial atmosphere or the tension in the too rigid, too precise postures of the Thousand Suns. This was not simply an honour guard to welcome a brother legion. This was a show of force, a warning and a declaration of purpose all in one. The Primarch stood beneath a glorious canopy of white silk held aloft by 60 bronze-skinned legion eunuchs and attended by 81 terminators of the Scarab occult. Dressed in his full battle plate, Magnus had eschewed many of the more intricate accoutrements of his armour in favour of a simpler aesthetic, one more suited to the directness of the wolves. A cloak of dark mail hung from the golden pauldrons of his armour, and his plumed helmet rose like a glorious cockade. His great book was absent, secreted within his pavilion behind locks that none save him could open. Ahriman glanced at the sky, a searing white plate of metal ready to press its great weight down upon them. He would not see the iron-grey dropships until they were almost upon them, but kept looking anyway. The inconstant forms of the tutelaries shimmered above their heads, barely visible against the glare of the sunlight on armour plates. 8PO flickered in and out of sight, its nervousness matching his wariness. Utipa and Peok held close to their masters, while Sioda pulsed in time with Kalophis' heartbeat, red as blood. Uthizar's tutelary, Ephra, was almost invisible, a hidden skein of timid luminosity that shrank from proximity to the others of its kind. "They spent all this time racing to get here, and then can't hurry up now that we're ready for them," complained Phocis Dekar. "Vintage space wolves," said Hathor Mart, and Ahriman saw that his brother had shaped his flesh into a less sculptured cast, no longer the porcelain features of ancient statue, more the rugged warrior. "Isn't that right, Uthizar?" Uthizar nodded without looking at Mart. "The warriors of Rus are unpredictable, except in matters of war," he said. "You should know," said Phocis Dekar. "You served with them for a time." "For a short time only," said Uthizar softly. "They are not fond of outsiders." "Ha!" barked Phocis Dekar. "They sound just like us. I almost like them already." "The wolves!" "They're barbarians," said Kilophus, surprising them all. He bristled like the alpha male of a hunting pack. The captain of the Sixth Fellowship was a brutal man, but Ahriman understood his sentiment. As much as he relished destruction, Kilophus was never imprecise or needless with his violence. "Kindred spirits for you, Kilophus," said Hathor Mart. "You should get on famously. Say what you will, Pavoni, but don't think I can't see your newly fleshed features." "Merely adapting to circumstances," replied Hathor Mart archly, his tutelary flickering with irritation. "Why do you call them barbarians?" asked Faustus Tekar. "No disrespect, but you are not a subtle man." "I know what you're thinking, but I have studied their campaigns, and they are a blunt instrument of war. There is no subtlety or precision to their fights, simply swathes of destruction without control. When the Emperor unleashes them, be sure not to get in their way, for when the wolves slip their leash, nothing will stop them until only ashes remain. Perturabo's warriors, now that's controlled aggression. We could all learn a lot from them. Precise force delivered exactly when it is needed."
"For once I feel myself in agreement with Kilophus," said Ahriman. "I must be ill."
They laughed, though Ahriman saw Uthizar's grimace. As part of their training, all captains of fellowship undertook a secondment to another legion to learn its ways and further the Thousand Suns' understanding of the galaxy. Kilophus had served with the Iron Warriors, a legion he admired and ranked second only to the Thousand Suns. Phocis Tekar fought alongside the Lunar Wolves and never tired of regaling his brothers with tales of meeting Horus Lupercal, or boasting of his close friendship with Hastur Sejanus and Ezekiel Abaddon, the first Primarch's closest lieutenants. Hathor Mart's secondment had seen him serving with the Emperor's children in their earliest days as they fought alongside the Lunar Wolves. As Hathor Mart told it, he had caught the Phoenician's eye with his perfectly moulded features and had fought within his sight on many an occasion. Mart's proudest possession was an oath of moment carved by Fulgrim and fixed to his breastplate as he took his leave to return to Prospero. Uthizar's secondment had been amongst the shortest ever served, lasting a little less than a Terran year. Ahriman was never sure whether the wolves or Uthizar had ended the exchange. Athenaeans shunned large gatherings, or those whose thoughts were too loud, too brutal, too jagged, and too raucous. Ahriman had spent 5 years with the Word-Bearers, learning much of their legion and methods of war. It had been an unhappy time for Ahriman, for the Scions of Lorgar were a zealous legion, their devotion to the Master of Mankind bordering on the fanatical. All the legions were devoted to their lord and his cause, but the Word-Bearers lived and fought with the passion of those who claimed to carry the fire of the divine before them. Their auras had been blazing pillars of certainty, certainty Ahriman felt was unwarranted, for it was unsupported by foundations of knowledge. Some called it faith. Ahriman called it hopeful ignorance. Save for a warrior named Erebus, he had made few friends in the 17th Legion, for their fervour left no room for those who did not share its passion. Lorgar's Legion bore an inauspicious number, for in the traditions of ancient Tali, the number 17 was one of ill fortune. 17 was considered as the anagram and numerical value for the ancient Gothic expression vixi, which meant I lived, and whose logical extension was, therefore, I am dead. Ahriman's thoughts were dragged back to the present by a wordless expression of unease from Apio. He looked up to see a pair of angular grey aircraft plunging down through the hard yellow sky, dropping as though their engines had failed. They screamed down, flaming contrails blazing from the leading edges of their wings. "They're in a hurry," said Phocis Tekar. "Is that a good thing?" asked Ahriman.
"No," said Uthizar, his face pale beneath the darkness of his brown skin. "It is never good when the wolves race towards you."
"You can read them," asked Hathor Mart, "even from here."
"I could read their thoughts from orbit," said Uthizar, fighting to keep his tone even.
Ahriman watched as the drop ships fell, plotting their approach vectors and realizing they would miss the landing fields.
"Something's wrong," he said. "They are off target, way off."
The dropships fell like meteors that would impact on the salt flats and leave nothing behind save devastation and a giant crater. The image fixed in Ahriman's mind for a moment, and he wondered if it was imagination or a fragmentary glimpse of the future. The dropships fired their engines just as Ahriman was sure it was too late to arrest their descent. The roar of retros like the howls of 1,000 wolves as they slammed down, off to the side of Magnus's silk canopy.
Gritty clouds of exhaust roared out from the landing site, a hurricane of hot air and burnt salt crystals. The gene-bulked eunuchs fought to hold the wind-blown canopy down in the face of the dropship's jet wash. Even before the obscuring clouds had begun to dissipate, the assault ramps of the dropship slammed down. Grey, armoured figures emerged from the swirling, stinging smoke, their lithe power wolf-clad, sure and honed to a lethal edge, a pack of voracious predators who relished the fight at bay. Leading them was a figure in grey, a leather-masked warrior of pure, streamlined aggression. Amlodi Skarsen Skarsensen, Lord of the Fifth Company of the Space Wolves. Annaman hadn't known what to expect from the Space Wolves. Uthisar had not exactly been forthcoming after his secondment had ended. They were not friends enough for him to press for details, but he had assumed the grand tales and hyperbolic praise heaped upon the sons of Russ was the exaggeration of storytellers. Now he knew that was not so. A pack of slavering wolves, dappled grey and white, with powerful, muscular shoulders, ranged ahead of the Astartes. Their eyes, slitted yellow, were locked on Magnus. Their jaws drew back to expose masses of long, overdeveloped fangs like ivory daggers. The wolves snapped and snarled, and their monstrous shaggy heads swung from side to side, as though deciding what to attack first. Behind the wolves came hulking warriors in steel-dust Terminator armour, with Amlodi Skarsen Skarsensen at their head. He marched through the smoke and dust towards the ruin of Magnus's pavilion, shoulders down as though he were advancing into the teeth of a blizzard. His armour was the battered grey of a thundercloud, and a blackened wolf pelt was secured around his neck on a bone clasp, the slain beast's enormous skull and teeth forming his right shoulder guard. Instead of a helmet, Skarsen wore a tight-fitting leather mask fashioned in the form of some hideous amalgam of wolf and demon, lacquered and pierced with fragments of stone. His eyes shone through the mask, cold flint to match the grey of his armour, and a black-bladed axe with an edge like napped obsidian was sheathed across his back. His warriors were no less feral, their weapons and armour festooned with talismans and fetishes torn from the corpses of wolves. They followed in their leader's wake, carried along in the slipstream of his march, juggernauts of ceramite that Araman wasn't sure were going to stop. He rose through the enumerations, outraged at this blatantly challenging behaviour. 8PO squalled in fear, and Araman's concentration slipped as his tutelary fled to the sanctuary of the great ocean. He looked back at the snarling wolves, their form blurring for a moment, as they stared at him with intelligent eyes that were chilling in their perception. It took him a moment to realize that all the tutelaries had fled. Anger turned to momentary confusion, and all eyes turned to Magnus. Araman felt his Primarch's soothing presence in his mind, the words unspoken, but heard by all the captains of fellowship. "Hold, my sons, this is posturing, nothing more." The giant wolves halted, forming a rough semicircle around them and the terrified eunuchs. The wolves lowered their heads, teeth bared. The urge to send a pulse of destructive energy along the length of his hecker staff was almost overwhelming.
"Magnus the Red!" said Skarsen, as though there might be some doubt. His voice was booming and harsh, the voice of a killer. "I am called Amlodi Skarsen Skarsensen, Lord of the Fifth Company of the Space Wolves, and I bring a call to arms from Leman Russ, Great Wolf of the Legions of Fenris. You are to muster your forces and make all haste to the Arkreach Cluster. This the Wolf King commands."
To stand before a being so mighty as a Primarch and to deliver such a boldly aggressive demand beggared belief. Without being aware of it moving, he realized his hand was on the butt of his gun, and seething waves of outrage shone in the auras of his fellow captains. His limbs trembled with etheric energies, the gently lapping tide within roiling into a series of roaring breakers that demanded release. The influence of the Corvid Day was at its lowest ebb, but Araman could still draw on the power of the great ocean to unleash phenomenal powers of destruction. The ether swelled around him as he built energy in his flesh. This was what it meant to be alive, to tap into the wellspring of the primordial creator and wield that power as deftly as a swordsman wields a blade.
That energy swirled around Skarsen and his warriors. Yet where it easily passed through the Astartes of the Thousand Suns, the Space Wolves were anathema to it. Skarsen's aura was little more than a dulled haze, like winter sunrise through thick fog. Was Skarsen veiled? That seemed unlikely, though perhaps the many fetishes hanging from his armour were shielding him. The protection offered by such talismans was largely illusory, but belief in such things could be a potent force. Even as he formed the thought, Adamant caught a flash of a bearded warrior in a leather skullcap in the midst of the Terminators, like a shadow amongst the deeper darkness or a whisper in a thunderstorm. He sensed kindred power, but in the instant of its recognition, it vanished. "Show some damned respect," snarled Phocis Takkar, and the moment passed. The captain of the Second Fellowship stepped forward with his Hecastaff planted in the ground before him and said, "Speak thusly again, and I swear by the great ocean I will end you." To his credit, Skarsen didn't flinch, which was impressive considering the bludgeoning force of Phocis Takkar's collar hammering his aura. Skarsen kept his attention fixed solely on Magnus. "Do you understand my message as I have spoken it to you?" he asked. "I understand it," said Magnus coolly. "Take off your mask." The Space Wolf flinched as though slapped, and Adamant sensed a ferocious build-up of power. He gasped as the energy filling him was drained in an instant, siphoned off by a mind infinitely greater than his. With painful deliberation, his limbs shaking with the effort of resistance, Skarsen reached up and unfastened the buckle securing his mask. He pulled it from his face to reveal features that were craggy and worn like a storm-carved cliff. Clean-shaven, with high cheekbones and a brow pierced with jutting canine fangs like a crown, his lower jaw was tattooed to mimic the toothed jawbone of a wolf. Throbbing veins pulsed at Skarsen's temple. "That's better," said Magnus. "I never like to kill a man without first seeing his face." Magnus seemed to swell, growing in stature while simultaneously remaining as he had always appeared. The wolves yelped, lowering their heads and backing away from the mighty Primarch, and Adamant saw the beginnings of, not fear exactly, but the wariness of prey. Skarsen had come with one purpose, to bring the Thousand Suns to the Arkreach Cluster. He had delivered his message in the most unequivocal way possible, but Magnus could not be so easily dominated by the brute force of the Space Wolves. "Kill me, and you will suffer the wrath of the Great Wolf!" hissed Skarsen. "Be silent!" thundered Magnus, and the world stilled. All sound died as the wind ceased its moaning and salt crystals hung motionless on the hardpan. "You are nothing to me, Amlodi Skarsen Skarsensen. I can kill you where you stand. Before you or any of your savage brethren could lift a hand to stop me, I can smash your ships to debris with a thought. Know this, and choose your next words carefully." Adamant saw that Skarsen was not a warrior without courage, his aura instinctively rebelling at the challenge in Magnus's words, but nor was he without the wit to understand that he was a mote in the face of the Primarch's power. He looked to his left and right, seeing the world frozen around him, every banner hanging motionless and every observer save the Thousand Suns like statues lining a triumphal roadway. Skarsen lifted his head to expose the corded muscles of his thick neck, and Adamant recognized the symbolism of the gesture. Magnus nodded, and the world snapped back into its natural rhythms. The wind blew once more, and the silk banners flapped in the haze of dancing salt crystals. "Wolf Lord Skarsen," said Magnus, "I understand your message, but there is much to do on Agoru before we can fight alongside your father's legion." "This world is compliant, is it not?" asked Skarsen, and Adamant sensed the confusion amongst the Space Wolves at his newly subservient tone. "It is," agreed Magnus. "Then what is left to do?" he asked. "There are worlds yet to be brought to heel, and your legion strengthens required. Your brothers in arms call for you, and it is a warrior's duty to fight when called." "On your world, perhaps," said Magnus, "but this is not Fenris. Where and when the Thousand Suns fight is for me to decide, not the Wolf King, and certainly not you. Do I make myself clear?"
"You do, Lord Magnus, but I swore a blood oath not to return without your warriors. That is none of my concern, and this is not a matter for discussion," said Magnus, an unmistakable edge of impatience in his tone. "Then we are at an impasse."
"I fear that we are," said Magnus.
Ahriman concentrated on the words before him, his quill scratching at the heavy paper as he committed the morning's events to his grimoire. There would be other records, of course, but none that told of events with a true understanding of what had really happened. His words flowed from him without conscious thought as he rose through the enumerations and let the natural rhythm of memory and intuition guide him. He closed his eyes, freeing his body of light and letting it rise up from his flesh. The currents of the great ocean bore him into darkness, and Ahriman hoped to catch a glimpse of things to come. He quashed the thought. To focus on the desires of the ego in this place of emotion would only diminish the probability of success. His connection with the material world faded, and the great ocean swelled around him, a maelstrom of non-existent colours, nameless emotions, and meaningless dimensions. Occasional ripples ushered him onwards, powerful minds, intense emotions, and primal urges. The anger of the space wolves was a red reef of raw directness, the gasping lust of two remembrances as they coupled a purple swirling of conflicting desire. The fear of a legion surf, as he rubbed a salve into an infected rash, was a splash of vivid green. The scheming of yet another, as she plotted how to further her career, a dull ochre yellow. They rose around him like temple smoke, though concepts such as up and down had no meaning here. A swirling fog surrounded him, an impenetrable mist of emotion, feeling, and possibility. His mere proximity wrought potential existences within the fog, his presence an imprint in the warp and weft of the great ocean, shaping and shaped by the immaterial unmatter that made up this alternate dimension. This was the very essence of the primordial creator, the wellspring from which all things came. Nothing was impossible here, for this was the foundry of creation, the origin of all things, past, present, and future. Ahriman flew onwards, revelling in the etheric energies, bathing in them and refreshed by them. When he returned to his body, he would be energized as a mortal would be by a good night's rest. The kaleidoscopic world around him stretched out to infinite realms of possibility. Ahriman let his consciousness be borne along by the currents, hoping to chance upon a rich seam of things yet to pass. He focused his mind on the teachings of the Corvidae, even as he opened his mind to the vast emptiness of thought. Such, apparently, contradictory states of mind were essential to the reading of the future. Difficult for one such as him, near impossible for anyone less gifted. He felt the first nibblings of other presences in the great ocean, formless creatures of insensate appetite, little more than mewling scraps of energy drawn to his mind as students flock to a great master. They thought to feed on him, but Ahriman dismissed them with a flicker of thought. Such whelp creatures were no threat to an adept exemptus of his skill, but older, hungrier things swam the depths, malevolent predators that fed on the hot, life-rich energies of mortal travellers. Ahriman was protected, but he was not invulnerable. It began softly, a faint hiss, like rain on glass. He felt its feather-light pull, and he drifted towards it without apparent interest. Too quick, and he would disturb the fabric of the great ocean, overwhelming the skittish trickle of future events with the swells of his eagerness. Ahriman controlled his excitement, letting his course and that of the thin stream come together, opening his mind's eye to the bracing cold of unwritten events. He saw a mountain of glass, tall and hollowed out, yet a stripling compared to the mountain of Agoru. A great space within was filled with yellow light, a spiking cauldron of conflicting emotions and hurt. A gathering thundercloud, shot through with golden lightning, filled the sky. Ahriman knew this was important. Visions in the ether were shaped as much by the viewer as they were by the great ocean. This mountain and thunderstorm could be a true vision, or could be allegory, each aspect symbolic of something greater. It was the skill of the adept to sort one from the other. Hot excitement ghosted through his immaterial form. It had been years since any Corviday had been able to peel back the skin of the ether to reveal the future. Might this mean the eternal waxing and waning of the tides of power was shifting once more in his cult's favour? The intensity of the thought rippled outwards, disturbing the liquid nothingness enfolding him. The vision fractured, like the surface of a lake in a rainstorm. Adaman fought for calm, but his tenuous grasp on the stream was slipping. The glass mountain vanished, breaking into millions of pieces and falling like tears. A weeping eye was reflected in every shard, red and raw with pain. He fought to hold on to the jagged, painful images, but the ether surged and it was gone, swept away in the angry swells of his own desire. Like the onset of a sudden storm, the substance of the great ocean turned violent. His own frustration was turning against him. Red waves broke against him as his mind was wrenched from thoughts of the future. His perception of the immediate returned to him, and he sensed the vibrant hunger of nearby void hunters, rapacious conceptual predators that followed the spore of travellers' emotions to devour their bodies of light. Dozens of them circled him like sharks with the scent of blood. He had remained longer than was safe, far longer. The first emerged from the blood-red mist, all appetite and instinct. It came at him directly, its glittering teeth forming in the instant it took to think of them. Adaman flew out of its path, its crimson form twisting around to follow him as another predator emerged from the mists. His mental analogy of sharks had given them form, and its body was sleek and evolved to be the consummate killer. He forced his mind to empty, discarding all metaphor and vocabulary, for they were the weapons his enemies would use against him. He flew from them. But they had his scent now. Half a dozen more followed, their forms blurred and protean, borrowed from those whose bodies of light had been given shape by his careless simile. A void hunter surged towards him, massive and powerful, its jaws opened wide to swallow him whole. Adaman gathered the energy of the ether to him, feeding on the red mists and unleashing a torrent of will at the hunter. Its body exploded into shards of fire, each one snapped up and devoured by one of the other predators. Twin hecker-staffs appeared in Adaman's hands, blazing with etheric fire. Such weapons were necessary and dangerous at the same time. To burn so brightly would attract other beasts, yet without them he would surely perish here, leaving his mortal body a dead, soulless husk on the floor of his pavilion. They circled him, darting in to bite and snap, each time deterred by a sweep of his fiery staffs. Adaman rose into the eighth enumeration. He would need the focus of its aggression to stay alive, but it would only inflame the hunger of the beasts. The creatures came at him in a rush. Adaman had seen their gathering fury and lashed out with his blazing weapons. The closest beast billowed out of existence at his blow, the second with a violent burst of thought that overwhelmed its hunger and dispersed its essence. Another snapped at him. He swayed aside, its immaterial teeth snapping shut an instant from tearing his insubstantial existence apart. He thrust his hecker staff into his head, feeling its primal hunger and rage as its essence was obliterated. The pack broke off its attack, wary of him, but unable to halt their pursuit. The instincts of the void hunter were murderously sharp, but they demanded satisfaction. They would attack again, soon. They came at him three more times. Each time they retreated to a pack that grew larger with every passing moment, while he grew weaker and bled irresistible morsels of energy into the void. He could not long keep up this pace of battle. Combat in the etheric realms was more draining than battling in the physical. In the material realm, an Astartes could fight for weeks on end without rest, but here such endurance was measured in minutes. A high-ranking warrior of the Thousand Suns could travel the great ocean far longer than most, but the strain of this fight was pushing Adaman to the limits of his endurance. A great maw raced up at him from below, a thought-shaped need of monstrous proportions. Its teeth closed on his leg, tearing into his light, and his pain bled out like glittering diamonds, brilliant white and impossible to resist. His staff carved into the beast, and it vanished in its moment of triumph. He could not fight them much longer, and it seemed they knew his resistance was almost at an end. Their eagerness for him had them jostling one another, each beast desperate to make the kill and secure the choicest cuts. His energy was fading, and one of the fiery hecker-staffs winked out of existence. How galling to die after such a tantalizing glimpse of the future! Then
came a howling cry that split the great ocean, a furious sound that scattered the hunters as a wild darkness rose out of the swelling tides and currents. Fangs like swords of ice snapped and bit through the void hunters. This was form and will home to a knife edge, a force streamlined for destruction and utterly without mercy. Yellow eyes, a shaggy pelt of black fur, and slavering jaws roiled amid the frenzy. Even before Adaman's mind formed the image, he saw the phantasmal outline of the wolf, a beast larger and more powerful than any living animal could ever be. It tore through the void predators, howling as it destroyed them with brutal swipes of thunderous claws and bites that swallowed each enemy whole. Within the dark of the wolf's body, Adaman caught fleeting glimpses of the furious will that drove it, a distant shadow in dark armour, not black, but deep, metallic grey. The wolf howled, and waves of untrammeled fury spread into the great ocean with the force of a boulder dropped into a millpond. The predators scattered, cowed by this apex predator. And, like fading ink spots on a blotter, they melted into the darkness. The wolf turned towards Adaman, its form turning in on itself and folding like the pieces of an origami puzzle until all that was left was the shadow at its heart, the subtle body of an Astartes, in the hard grey of the space wolves. He drifted towards Adaman, and it took no special skills to feel the primal bruising energy that suffused this traveller's flesh. His sheer vitality was incredible. Adaman was a controlled reactor, but this warrior was a violent supernova. Both were deadly, both burned as bright. But where Adaman could pluck a single soul out of a horde of millions, this warrior would destroy a million to kill the one. The wolf was gone, but Adaman saw it tightly leashed within the warrior's heart. "We should go, brother," said the wolf warrior, with a voice like colliding glaciers. "The longer we tarry, the more our presence will draw fouler beasts." "I saw you," said Adaman. "You came with Skarsen."
"Lord Skarsen," corrected the warrior. "But you speak true, brother. My name is Othere Weirdmake, rune priest to Amlodi Skarsen Skarsensen of the 5th Company of Space Wolves."
"Azek Adaman, chief librarian of the Thousand Suns."
"I know your name, Azek Adaman," said Weirdmake, with a feral grin, "for I have long desired to meet you."